This is an interview with Florence Madison for the Youngstown State University Westlake Terrace Oral History Project by Joe Drobny on October 16, 1985 at 2634 Stalker Avenue in Youngstown at approximately 5:30 in the afternoon. Mrs. Madison, just to get started, do you think you could tell me a little bit about your early life? For example, when you were born, where you lived originally, a little bit about your family as you were growing up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born in the South, deep South, in Greenville, Alabama. And I was 8 years old when my parents brought me to Youngstown. I began school in kindergarten at the age of 8, but at Jefferson School it was. I was able to, since I had a lot of older brothers and sisters, I had learned quite a bit, and they were able to skip me. So I completed the 12 years in 10 and a half years, high school.
So you began your public education at the age of eight in kindergarten up here in Youngstown.
Yeah, and I graduated from Lorain High School at the age of 18.
I see. Now you mentioned Greenville, Alabama. As you were growing up, when you lived in Greenville, was both parents alive? What did your parents do?
My father was a farmer. And he came to Youngstown and worked in the Republic Mill. Education was rather hard. Well, it wasn't easy to obtain a good education in the South. And they wanted to do something for us, for the children. There had been 10 of us, but only the five younger ones, I was one of the youngest ones, only the five younger ones were able to go to school because some of the older ones were married, and the older boys went into the mills with my dad at the same time to help support the family.
Mrs. Madison, excuse me, but you were one of 10 children?
One of 10. I was number 9.
Number 9. Mm-hmm. One of the youngest, almost the baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Five brothers and 4 sisters.
Your father, you mentioned he was a farmer. Was he a tenant farmer? Did he rent land? How did that work?
No, my grandfather, at the end of the Civil War, my grandfather had been given, you knew about the homestead act. Well, my grandfather had a number of acres. And he had enough that all of his children were able to, share as they grew up. They lived in different parts of the land that he had owned. In fact, when he died, somewhere here I have a copy of his will where he had apportioned it all out to all of, his children and grandchildren. The land is nice. We were down there 1 year, my husband and I went down south, I think it was late 60s or early 70s. It's a beautiful country down there, and we like it, but still have to have a means of living, it wasn't tenant farming, it was your, farming for yourself.
How many acres he, you have a guess at how many acres?
Well, he had more than 40 acres. In fact, he had his portion, then he had a brother, his grandfather had a brother, who chose not to keep his land, and so he gave that to my grandfather, too. So, at that time, they were giving the men who wanted to homestead, they could give them 40 acres apiece. So I guess it was, nearly 80 acres to...
Was this like a full-time family occupation until you moved to Youngstown, all the kids helping out on the farm?
Yeah, my older brothers and sisters helped. See, there were, my first two were sisters, and then the next three or four were brothers, and then there was the youngest brother, who was just above me, and then myself and my youngest sister. So the boys helped with the farm. My father came here first because his brother had come here first. His brother had a moving company, and his brother came here. And then my father came here, and then two of my brothers came with my father to work in the mill. And that way they had got the money to send for the rest of the family.
So your father came up here first.
Yeah.
And you and your brothers and sisters and mother...
And mother came later. But see, two brothers came second after my father. They came to work in the mill also.
Two of your brothers or
yeah,
two of
Yeah, two of my brothers. Two of my brothers. My father came first. See, my father's brother came originally. He had a moving company. So my father came, but he went to work in the mill. Then two of my brothers, my brother Frank and my brother Ben, came to work in the mill to help to earn the money. At that time, the wages were very, very little. You know, just a few cents an hour.
Seems to me, Mrs. Madison, that in order to attract you and your family, I mean, this is a major move from a farm from Alabama up here to Youngstown. Your brother, or rather your father's brother,
came first.
Must have, in letters or something, said that really things could get much better in Youngstown. What were some of the major attractions that caused your father to make the move up here?
Well, really, they wanted us to have a good schooling. And it was said that the mills were offering jobs for people, you know, for men. And this was shortly after the First World War. No,
About 1918 or 1919
or something like that, when my father first
when your
came.
Father moved.
Uh-huh.
You said that one thing that interests me a little bit is you stated that he wanted to get better schooling for his children.
For his children. Mm-hmm.
Now, am I not correct at the time in Greenville, Alabama, we're talking about a South where the black kids went to the one school? And,
yes.
What was the black school like around?
Well, you know, I didn't get a chance. Actually, I went one day, and it was, I don't know if it was September or October that year. You had to walk so far, and when we got there, the teacher hadn't arrived, because, frankly, people had to pay a teacher to come. It wasn't public in the same manner that we have public schools here.
Who had to pay the teacher?
The people who had children who were going to school. Say, for instance, if my neighbor, you know, people on the street or people in the farm, on the separate farms, wanted a teacher, they had to pay her out of their pocket. There was no public school in that the city or state didn't pay for the schooling for the children.
For all children or just possibly black children?
Black, that's what I'm saying, for the black. Because I didn't know about the other schools. And one day that I went to school with my older brother and sisters, when we got there, the teacher hadn't arrived. I don't know what was the reason, but she just hadn't shown up. I don't know if they hadn't obtained one, or if they did not have enough money to pay her, or what, but she didn't show up. So when I got home that night, I was so tired, all I could do was flop in the bed. my mother was still, you know, there with us. She said, I wouldn't have to go back because we were coming up north shortly. So we came here in October of 1924.
Of 1924?
Mm-hmm.
And you say one of the major attractions is your father felt that you could get much better public schooling here in Youngstown.
Yeah, my uncle had told him that. You know, my uncle who had been here and you know, several years ahead of him.
But beside your family, just out of curiosity, did you know of, say, other black rural families in the general Alabama area that also were talking about coming up north, coming up to Youngstown?
But, you know, I was only eight, you know, living on a farm. You don't know what's happening. You only hear what the grown-ups say, because you know, you don't get a chance to play with the other kids. You're too.
You had nine brothers and sisters to play with. That was.
Yeah, but my two older sisters were married. In those days, you married early. My oldest sister was 18 years older than I, and my second sister was 16 years older than I, and they were both married. In those days, it was common to marry at 16, 17.
I see. So at the time, in 1924, both your two of your older sisters
were
already
married.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you remember well the trip up? How long did it take you?
I remember, but you know, when you're going on a long trip like that, kids sleep a lot. I can remember when we were in Cincinnati. Well, first, I don't know what the city was in the south. We stayed all night with some cousins, and they lived in town. And I remember the fireplace. The house attracted me. It was so nice. I think they had paved streets. You know, when you're living on a farm, you don't know what's paved streets are like. Paved streets and sidewalks and that. Then when we were coming out, we stopped and we had to change trains in Cincinnati.
Oh, you came by train?
Yeah.
I see.
How do you think we got here?
I thought maybe you brought a truck up or a car.
No. We came on the train.
Well, how did all the family belongings get up here?
I think they, well, look, my mother, she, you know, as I said, we lived on a farm. We had a cow and we had horses and we had chickens and she had you know, geese and ducks and guinea hens. I remember them. They were little speckled, they had speckled feathers. Well, most of the stuff like that she sold off. And the guinea hens flew up into the tree and you couldn't get them, so they left them there. I remember that. But I'll tell you, there was my oldest brother, George, and then there were five others of us, and my mother. George, Brother Raymond, my sister Maud, my brother Jay, my sister Cora, and I, and my mother. So we were all on the train. I remember in Cincinnati, the huge, you know, the high the ceilings were.
At the train station.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I've seen pictures of that big old train station.
It was beautiful.
Your father then had already picked out a home.
Yeah. Well, there was a little house over on Fleming Street, the corner of Fleming and Oakland.
Fleming and Oakland, and that was your first home here in Youngstown?
Yes.
What do you remember most about your first impressions? Here's a little black girl from the rural south, arrives in Youngstown. What were your first impressions? You remember the thing that struck you immediately? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, it was on October. It was about the 24th of October that night. We rode the streetcar, and we were supposed to get off at Fleming Street.
You rode the streetcar from the train station?
Pennsylvania Station.
Oh, from, okay.
It was on, was it Spring Common? You know, there used to be a water trough outside there. You wouldn't know.
Tell me all about it.
Well, there was a water trough outside where horses, you know, they used to have horses in Youngstown, and the horses would drink from the water trough that was outside. When you came out of the station, you had to walk up some steps to get up to the sidewalk, because the station was down below street level. You had to walk up some steps. There was a water trough out there that horses were watered, because when my uncle first started his moving company, he used horses, you know, horses and I guess a wagon. I don't know if it was a clothes wagon or what. Anyhow, we caught the streetcar, pulled it too late, and we got off. We were supposed to get off at Fleming, but we didn't get off until Jefferson Street. St. Anne's Church was there. You know, that great big You ever see pictures of
I
it?
I know which one you were talking about.
Well, now it was a cold night, and I remember how cold I was because my mother had one of those bulky sweaters for me. Before we left this house, she had ordered, you know, mail order clothing because we'd been told it was colder up here. And the coat for me didn't arrive, so in Cincinnati they bought this sweater for me, bulky, but I remember, oh, I was cold, you know, and we had to shiver all the way from Fleming over to, I mean, from up Jefferson to the corner of Oakland and across Oakland back to our house there on the corner of Fleming.
Had you ever seen snow before you came up to Youngstown?
No.
So that was a surprise.
Yeah.
I've heard other people. How about all the smoke and the smokestacks and the mills? Did you kind of notice that right off?
No, I didn't. You know, I didn't pay it any attention. You know, kids don't pay too much attention to something like that. What I didn't like, down south, there was so much land you had to play in. And we were living in a little house there on the corner. You know, very little land. There was my mother had a little garden in the backyard. And there was only the sidewalk to play on. And my mother was always, you know, we were too noisy for her. She wasn't used to having kids underfoot, you know, because before there'd been all that land. And you felt cramped after having lived in acres and then have to come down to just a little lot.
Now, that area that you lived in there on Fleming Street, was that mainly black, or were there other ethnic groups?
There were others. We played with a girl, Stella Sokolowski, that lived across the street on the corner. Our number was 34, her number was 44. And across the street from them was McNicholas's, you know, who Mr. McNicholas was later the chief of police in Youngstown. His brothers were the ones who had the McNicholas Moving Company. They lived upon Worthington Street, the other brothers.
So you're saying the whole neighborhood wasn't, say, steel workers, or it was a different groups of people?
Yeah, uh-huh. And, there were some Hungarians, and it was a mixed neighborhood.
I see. Now, speaking of your father, you mentioned he got the job at Republic.
Yes.
Now, did he ever indicate to you, or did it seem to you, it was a tremendous change from being a farmer in the South to having to work in the mill day in and day out?
You know, in those days, they had to work so hard, I don't think they even had time to think. Because a lot of times, I didn't see my father. He'd go to work in the morning before we got up for school, and when we came home in the evening, if he had arrived back home, he was in bed. They worked 14 or more hours a day. It was hard work with, you know, very little pay. I don't know if it was supposed to be better than down in the South, but actually I can't see how it was that much better.
You're saying that your father sometime worked more than 10, 12 hours a day, possibly?
Yes, he did. The hours were very long. This is before the unions.
I see. So we're probably talking about late 1920s, early 1930s.
Yeah, well, Depression started in 29, remember?
Exactly.
So he wasn't working then. You know, no work.
Well, you had mentioned briefly that you were in school all day and then sometimes you wouldn't see him till late at night. What were the schools? I know you graduated from Rayen, but what were the grade school and then the junior high you went to previous to Rayen?
Jefferson. We had Miss McNabb, first woman principal in Youngstown. Miss Margaret McNabb, her name was.
This was in Jefferson Elementary? Or?
Mm-hmm, Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And she was firm, but she was kind. She loved all the children. I remember once, this was when I was in kindergarten, and you know, kids have a habit of calling names. Well, I didn't know, I'd never been called a name before, so I didn't even pay any attention to it. And this little white boy had called me nigger. The kindergarten teacher had taken him to the principal, And I didn't know anything until Miss McNabb had paddled him and brought him back to the room, and he was red-faced and crying. And hey, a name didn't mean anything to me at that time, and because I'd never been called, you know, called those derogatory names. So, but I say, the school was quiet, and Miss McNabb had it under very good control. Because in those days, I guess all schools were in those days, because you went to school, there was no nonsense. You went to school to learn. A lot of kids didn't get a chance to finish even grade school. My brother Raymond was the first one in our family. He was the oldest of the five younger ones. He graduated from RAND. They had graduated, not RAND, Hayes. I don't mean Hayes.
Jefferson.
It was a proud moment for our family because...
this is like a sixth or seventh grade graduation.
Eighth grade then.
He was the first one to reach eighth grade.
Eighth grade, yeah. At that time, Jefferson went all the way to the eighth grade. And he got a new... You had to wear a navy blue suit or a dark, you know, a black suit or something like that, and a white shirt and a tie and, you know, all dressed up. And then put chairs in the hall. Jefferson had some wide hallways, so, but that was used for the auditorium. They didn't have an auditorium at that time. So chairs were placed there, and families, you know, grandparents and parents, and, you know, all the relatives would come to the graduation. And we were pretty proud of our brother who graduated from Jefferson School.
What was the next step up from Jefferson?
For the brother?
Well, for the family in general, including yourself.
Well, then he graduated from RAND. The same brother graduated from RAND.
Oh, so Jefferson went through the eighth grade.
Yeah, and then he went to RAND.
Then you went to RAND.
That was before RAND, before Hayes was built.
I see.
And, but, now, I went to Hayes because, in the meantime, Hayes was built.
You went to Hayes?
Yeah, from Jefferson to Hayes to RAND. So then I graduated from RAND. I was the second one in the family to graduate.
I see. What do you remember about your education? Did you like school?
I loved it. It was a challenge to me. I just loved learning. And you know what? When I was a kid, my mother would tell me, do this job or do that, and I'd do the job, and then I'd grab a book and sit down. And she'd come along, I thought I told you to do that. I did do it, Mom. But she wanted me to continue working all the time, and I was forever grabbing books. I loved going to the library. I, you know, as many books as they'd allow me to have, I'd bring them home, and I'd read. I just read. And at night, I had a little flashlight. My oldest brother had, you know, the oldest brother who went to school here, and had a paper route. And when he got in RAND, then he gave the paper route to me and my younger sister. And we were working for the telegram at that time. You know, telegram? You know?
And your younger sister?
I don't mean working in delivering papers.
Delivering paper. The old Youngstown telegram went out of business, yeah. I think, in about 37. Yeah,
well, we were delivering papers. My brother had this paper route for the telegram. And for getting new customers, I earned this flashlight. You know, it's a little square one with the shape like something like a lantern. And when my mother would tell me to go to bed, I'd take the flashlight to bed and get under the cover and do my reading. So, when I just loved learning. I just loved anything that was printed. I was forever grabbing it.
As you were growing up, what do you remember? Let's see if you can try to compare Youngstown now to what Youngstown was like in the 1920s and 30s. Tell me a little bit about what you remember about downtown, the amounts of people, the buildings, everything.
Well, downtown, there were bright lights in the evening. In the daytime, you could scarcely walk on the sidewalk because, you know, there were so many people. It was really a bustling downtown at that time. The stores were the windows were always decorated. They were, you know, beautifully decorated. Even as I was growing up, when I lived in the project later, we considered it, you know, you didn't have money for shows or something, so you went winter shopping.
About the movie houses, did you ever go to?
Yeah, some, but my mother wouldn't let me go much. She was terribly religious, and she didn't approve too much of movies. Sinful, what she thought.
When you normally went downtown, first of all, did you walk or take the trolley, or
we
how?
We usually walked because it wasn't that far. Everybody walked. People from further out in Briar Hill walked to town. You'd see the people, usually it was the women, and they'd have two shopping bags, and they'd come trudging along back home with two shopping bags. I guess that's about, it would be about 4 or 5 miles, I think, from, we were on Fleming, which was only about halfway, but then there were others who had to go past St. Anne's and on down West Federal, and, our West Federal sort of dips down and curves around. People from, all the way around there would come with their shopping bags.
Did you ever take the trolley downtown?
Not too much. No.
I just wonder about what a trolley ride costs.
Oh, I think we would run about 8 or 10 cents. Even when we went to church, we had to walk, because see, there was too many of us. Mom, my mother couldn't
afford to pay for a trolley ride.
Yeah, for 4 or 5, say 4 or 5 kids. And my mother, that was too much. Later on, but that was later on, after Mr. Vaughn became councilman. Mr. Vaughn was William S. Vaughn, his name was. He was a black councilman, third ward. He got...
About what years are we talking?
I don't know, was this in the 30s? Late 20s. Late 20s, probably, because I don't remember now whether it was the late 20s or some early 30s. He was able to get the Sunday passes, so one grown up and two kids could ride, and he was able to get the passes, enacted in council. I think the passes were about $1 for a week. And then a Sunday pass was at 25 cents.
Going quickly back to your father, a question just arrived in my mind. Working there in a Republic mill, did he ever talk about or give any indication as to what it was like in the mill, like the conditions or the type of work? Did he ever talk about that?
I don't think he did. I don't remember him ever talking about it. After they started having the strikes and you heard about the conditions, would be in the paper, it was only then you learn how difficult the work must have been. I don't even know what department he worked in down there. I don't know that.
You also mentioned that you and your sister had a job as a newspaper girl.
Yeah, for the Telegram.
Tell me about that. Like, where'd you pick the papers up? How'd you get around?
There was a Mrs. Loftus. She was Irish, who had a store around on West Federal, a block away from us. The Italianos had a gas station next door, on the corner of Fleming.
This was the name of a family?
Yeah, Italiano.
That was their name?
Yeah, they're still in town. Are you taping now? No, yeah. Later I'll tell you that. We played with the Italiano kids, and Ms. Loftus had the store, and we had to go there to get the papers. Then my sister would take papers down on Lilac Street, which was down Worthington Street, and she'd take some in the near neighborhood. But I had to deliver papers up Fleming, across Coral, up Jefferson, back down Worthington partly, to Lexington, across Lexington, and on Clyde, and around Roland, and upward, and across Parmalee, and up Foster. It took all evening to make the delivery, because in those days, wherever you got a customer, you could have that customer. Now, the routes are...
In certain areas.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but in those days, I went all the way up to Crandall, well, to Fairgreen, Fairmont, Crandall, and then back down past, we cut through the back way through Jefferson Schoolyard, and then back down Jefferson at home.
Now, this was on a bicycle or walking?
Walking, every day.
And you were about how old?
13, 14 or something like that. Were it you? Was safer in those days.
That's what I was going to ask you. No, nowadays,
you
mother wouldn't allow
no,
that.
No, you didn't have the problem then that you have now. You know, if you went to town, you could leave your door unlocked, you could go to town and come back. Nobody ever bothered anybody's possessions in those days. And two, then the child, every child had to behave because the neighbors, if they saw you do anything, they'd report it to your mother. You got, babe, you got what for? And so there were really, there was no, there were crimes such as we have now. It was unthought of.
Did you kind of get, would you say that was a general rule in your, in the blocks that you lived around? Everybody kind of looked out for everybody's kids or
yes,
knew the...
Yes, that's the way it was in those days. Yeah.
Another question has popped in my mind about your paper route. How much did you and your sister make, do you recall?
Well, for a week it was 18 cents. The paper was 3 cents a day. So 6 days was 18 cents, you know, for each customer. And I don't know if you earned a penny or a penny and a half. I don't think you got the whole penny and a half because that would be half of the cost. It couldn't be too much. I can't recall what it was. But it helped me with my arithmetic because the other kids were using their fingers in school. And boy, I knew 18, you know, 9, 18, 27, you know, it helped me with my math.
Speaking of, it just occurred to me that working there on the paper route, if you were about 13 or 14, we're probably talking around 1930, 31, sometime like that.
Yes.
This leads me into asking some questions about the Depression. Do you remember when your father got, say, laid off from the mill and some of the ways the Depression really affected your family?
Yeah, well, I, you know, you can't pinpoint the day. But for us, it was easier than for some because we had all the brothers, and whenever the brothers earned anything, my mother was one of those matriarchs. Anytime anybody earned any money, they had to put it in her hand. So other people envied us because we had, you know, more people bringing in. It was small, you know, small amounts.
The larger the family, the more the money could come in.
Yeah, And
what were some of those other types of jobs some of the brothers and other family members worked in?
For a time, two or three of my brothers went down to West Virginia working in the mines, and they would come back every 2 weeks dirty, you know, and of course they'd have to, well, you know, I told you first the two brothers had been working in the mill with my dad, and then later they went, when you'd go anywhere you heard about work, so they went to the mines for a while. I don't know if there had been any cave-in or what, but after all, they quit that, I think voluntarily, because the work was dirty and hard.
This was after they had got laid off from the mill when the Depression began.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit, where did they stay down there? How did they get down there? Tell me a little bit about that.
I don't know. You know, when you're a kid, they go and they come, you don't know. One brother had a car, but I'm not sure if he had a car at that time. You know, my brother Ben, he had a car. But, and then another thing, my brother Ben, this is important too, because Ben had a little band, you know, that played
music
dances, yeah. And my brother George played in his band sometime, and my brother Raymond played with him. Raymond's the one that graduated from RAM. You know, first one to graduate from RAM. In fact, Raymond had tried, he wanted to become a doctor. And he would play in the band at night, he'd go to school in the daytime, and then the bakery out on Hubbard Road, Hathaway Bakery. My youngest brother was working out there. In fact, he quit in Hayes. He quit school. You could get working papers then at 16. So he quit school to work because, you know, my dad didn't have work. And my brother Raymond would sometimes go out there and get extra work out there. And Raymond graduated in 1933, January. Used to be that you graduate twice a year. You know, the schools had two graduations, midterm and
June. Spring. Yes.
Then that brother went away to Wilberforce for until June, but then he came home ill with tuberculosis.
Raymond.
Raymond did. Back in those days, people in the bands would use each other's horn, you know.
Sure.
If you're tired, you would rest and somebody else would use your horn, so they passed the germs back and forth unknowingly. And, you know, quite a few did die of tuberculosis was prevalent in those days, I should say. And this brother died.
And he was your...
Brother Raymond.
Would he have been the second or third of the children as far as age?
Wait a minute. No, he was the... of the last five. He was the oldest of the last five, so it would make him 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He would have been the sixth child.
I see. And he was maybe 18 or 19 when he died?
No. He was a bit older, but the reason why, when we came from the South, he had had some schooling in the South, but when you came from the South, you were usually put back. You know, they call it put back, demoted, you might say, because the schools in the South were not on a level with the schools in the North. So he was demoted or put back until, well, he was about, he was 21 when he graduated from RAND. And he was 22 that May, and then he died that following December. So.
Now let me ask you a little bit about, you say you began school at the age of 8 and you graduated at 18.
Mm-hmm.
So we could put that at about 1935,
June.
Okay, when you graduated in June 1935, was the family still on Fleming?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait a minute. No, we weren't. After Raymond died, he died in December 33. He graduated in January 33. He died in December 33. In January, my brother, the oldest brother, had bought two houses on one lot over on Hayman Street. You know where the parking lot is now for the St. Elizabeth Hospital?
Yes, your oldest brother who had worked in the mill with your father.
Yeah.
So what, had he saved up his money to do this?
Yeah, I think so. Of course, you know, he played in the band, he saved his money. Anyhow, he bought the two houses. He was living in the front house. We moved into the rear house.
This is on Hayman Street.
Hayman, H-A-Y-M-A-N. That was January 34.
About 1934.
Yeah.
So was the family, your one brother had already died, so was it now your parents and about 9 people all living in two houses?
No, because my two sisters, you know, when we first came north, these two sisters who were married remained in the South for a while. Then later they came with their husbands. But at one time, I'm telling you, it was crowded there for one time because my oldest sister became a widow because her husband was murdered. And she had to move in with her. She had 3 boys. They were, her oldest boy was 5, and the second was 4, and the third one was 3. That's when we still lived on Fleming. But later, the second sister who lived in a little house behind us, she rented a house on West Federal where the CCC, you know that company, CCC,
okay,
company is. There was a house there, well, and so the two sisters moved into that house. And we were living on Hayman Street from 1934. I graduated in 35, I got married in 38.
So you lived there until you got married in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
During this time then, say from 1934 to 1938, of course this is during the Depression, you told me about the fact that your brothers went down and got some work in a coal mine. You mentioned the fact that you and your sister had been a paper girl.
Mm-hmm.
What were other ways that you managed to get along?
Well,
have grocery money.
Yeah. When my brother worked at the bakery, and after from time to time, my brother Ben worked there, my brother Jay worked there, my brother Ray worked there.
Which bakery was that, do you remember?
House of Hathaway, we used to call it. I think it's 1900 Hubbard Road. They closed a few years ago.
So you had these brothers all working at the bakery?
Yeah, and in those days, there was just one way you could get along. Dale Bread, or Dale Rose, or something like that, they would put them in barrels, and you could buy a barrel for a dollar. You had sweet rolls, all sorts of food in there, bread, everything. Sometimes they'd sell it to farmers for their hogs. But we could get barrel full, and the kids loved coming to our house because, neighborhood kids that we played with, because they loved, a barrel was about this big, one of those big wooden barrels of food. When I say food, I mean baked goods, pies, everything like that.
So the fact of having a family member working at a bakery during the Depression was really a heck of an advantage.
My mother always had a garden.
Now tell me about that. I understand a lot of people during the 30s had gardens, even very small ones.
Yeah, well, she had a small one in her backyard, and then out on West Federal Street, there were some people out there who had a lot that extended back. They probably rented it. Not many people owned in those days. It extended back to the railroads, to the railroad track. Well, for a time, my mother used to go around there and have a garden around there, too. And my sisters would have gardens. And in those days, neighbors helped each other. If they had something extra, they'd share with you. And if you had something extra, you'd share with them. So,
how about some of those government programs like the WPA? Did you ever know anybody that got involved in that, or the CCC, or some of those type of programs?
My husband went to the CCC, but that was before I got married.
I see.
But none of my brothers did, because they were managing as it was.
So they all had their own private ways of somehow getting along.
Yeah, of making a living.
Now, during this entire time, did it seem like your father had been laid off and then was laid off for years, or was he maybe getting called back and then laid off? How did that seem?
I don't recall him being called back. I don't, because I think there were people were saying, before people used to complain because the curtains would get so dirty from the soot, from the mill soot. And then the curtains stayed clean, the river got clear, and they were saying pretty soon there'd be fish back in the river, because the mills weren't putting any, effluvia,
Thought of another quick question I was interested in. When you moved up to Hayman Street, which is up there by where St. Ease is.
Mm-hmm. St. Ease was smaller then, much smaller.
Ah, I see. Was that also kind of a mixed ethnic area, or?
Yeah, but the thing about it, usually when one black moves in a neighborhood, the whites start putting up signs and they move out. So it didn't stay mixed for very long. Of course, there are still a few whites that are still in that neighborhood. I think the last white that died, that was on Hayman Street, died about a year or two ago. So some people wouldn't, refuse to run because, they weren't afraid.
Well, how about the fact, did it seem when you moved in that area, were they all mainly unemployed steel workers, or we're not talking about doctors and lawyers?
No. They probably were.
In other words, economically, they were no different from
you.
No,
the incomes were about the same. Yeah, I think so. call, I'm trying to recall, this Mr. Collins that lived across the street from us on Hayman. He had a little store, a little grocery store around on Griffith Street. You know, it was just a little store that was attached to the front of a house. But I think he had been in the mill originally. And I can't recall any other jobs that people were... Because sometimes some of the women would do day work. And my two older sisters, house cleaning. Other people. And I think sometimes they bring home things that, you know, if there was food left over, you know, from a meal or something or other, then the woman didn't, you know, the housewife didn't want to keep it. She didn't know she'd give that to them. So those were probably other methods of, you know, stretching your money.
So you, basically, you lived with your family until 1938 when you became married.
Yes.
So it's 1938, Mrs. Madison, and that's when you and your husband married. What did you do? Where did you live then? Where did you move?
We were still living. I mean, when we got married, I was living on Hayman Street. Then, back in those days, housing was hard to come by, and the income was small. My husband was earning $10 a week for cleaning. I don't know, it was a billiard hall. Downtown. And he was earning $10 a week. I was earning $5 a week when I tell my kids about that.
What were you doing at that time, 1938?
My uncle, you know, that had that moving company, I kept the office for him. It was on Federal Street. You know where the McNicholas, you know, it's empty now, it's vacant now.
Well, what was the title of it? What was your
Young's, own? Wait a minute. Transfer and storage. Wait a minute, what's the name of that thing? Transfer and storage company. What is the name of it? I have to ask Ralph. Is that okay?
Oh, that's okay. I was okay. Just curious.
Yeah.
But you worked in
Spring
the office.
Spring Common. That's what it was. That's what they called it. Spring Common Transfer and Storage Company.
That was your uncle's business.
Yeah.
And you worked in the office for it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Answering the phone, and there wasn't that much typing. Business wasn't that, you know, sometimes they'd have a lot of work and then again it was very little. So
and you say that you and your husband originally in 38 you're still living
well
up there on
no
Hayman.
when I got married, mm-hmm. As I'm saying, housing was scarce. So in those days, if you got married, you rented a room in somebody's house. You know, you know, they rented your bedroom, and then you had the use of the kitchen. That was pretty much the accepted thing.
Oh, that was common? That was
yeah.
A common practice?
Yeah, because there were no houses, there were no apartments.
So you're saying housing in general was short. Where was the room that you folks rented?
On Harlem. The man was Mr. Johnston. His last name, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N, Johnston.
Big house?
Not that big. Two bedrooms. It was just he and his wife. And so they had one bedroom, we had one bedroom. And,
now it seems to me at this time when you moved up to Harlem, especially when you lived on Hayman, you were just really up from that general Westlake Crossing area. This is
yeah.
Before they started to put the project in.
Right.
What do you remember about Westlake Crossing area? I understand there were some really older, dilapidated...
Well, there were on the lower part, but for a while there had been, when you go down Covington and turn to the left, you know, before you go across the crossing, there used to be an open air market, something like the Pyatt Street Market, from there, you know, from the corner around to Foster Street. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evening, you could go and buy produce that the farmers brought in. And, of course, there were some older houses along Rayon Avenue there. And
how about down around Wirt and Griffith? How about the housing there?
I can remember that. I remember that. And there was Morrison. There was another street called Morrison. It was done away with when the project was built. The houses were all small. Nice thing about it, though, the people tried to keep their, you know, some of them were owners of their land. And they painted whenever they could. They usually had just a little patch of grass, because the lots were real small, a little patch of grass in the front. The women always had flowers. It was a clean little neighborhood. Up Griffith now, across from what is now the Griffith from Madison back down on the left side, the side where the project is. There used to be what they call row houses. The houses were, and sometimes they call them shotgun houses because you can shoot right through them. You know, one room is right behind the other.
These were along which street?
Griffith. They were torn down for the project.
That's where the row houses were.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of those row houses.
They were there on that block. And I only lived on Harlem from August when we got married till October.
October 38.
That same year, yeah.
Just one more quick question was still on my mind about that whole... One question about that general Westlake Crossing area before the projects, the row house area, that down there, the Griffith Street, Worth Street area. Ethnically, or you see what I'm saying, was it mixed or was it all one ethnic group?
It was mixed for a while because on Covington, you know, there's that St. Peter's and Paul church there on the corner of Covington at Arlington, and there was their church school, and there were, well, originally it had all been white, I guess, but there were, it was mixed white and black. And this church across the street from, on Arlington, across the street from St. Peter's and Paul, is Tabernacle, that at that time I was attending that church. And, what was the name of that store? There was a white store, a white-owned store there in the middle of Covington. That it existed until just a few years ago when some Arabs got it, and then I guess some blacks firebombed it. But it was pretty much mixed for a long time.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that in October of 1938, you and your husband moved from Harlem?
Yeah. There was a little, three little apartment, concrete block house that was on Griffith across the street from these row houses. At present, it's now a part of Covington's property. The house is no longer there, but I lived in the middle, and there were three little apartments. Living room, tiny little bedroom, tinier kitchen, and a little tiny half bath. I lived in the middle one, which had a ceiling light instead of, for the bedroom, instead of a window. Because, see, the way they were built, see the living room, and directly back from the living room is the kitchen, the dining room, not dining room, bedroom. There was a little narrow hall that went off from the living room alongside the bedroom. And then a little tiny bathroom at the end of the hall and a little kitchen over to the right of it. I remember most about that bedroom we had. The bedroom was so small, if you put the bed, and the ceiling light was above it. If you put the bedroom here, it rained on this side of the bed. If you put the bed over here, it rained on that side of the bed.
I see. Now this was on, this was right
on
around
Griffith, on Griffith, right across from what is now the project, but at that time the row houses were there. So I was there. We were there from October until June. June 39. And so they had started tearing down the houses, you know, the houses here on Griffith, they were tearing them down.
Yeah, tell me about that. When did this word get around that something that big was going to happen, that there was going to be this project?
You heard it by word of mouth. You know, a lot of times people couldn't afford newspapers. And so, by word of mouth, somebody would tell you. I guess it was, you know, it was probably in the paper. We heard it. But my husband wasn't working. So he worked for a little while, and he got laid off down there, you know, that place down there.
At the billiard place.
Yeah. Then my brother got him on out at Hathaway Bakery for a little while. But he only worked there for a short while. He had to belong to the union in order to stay on, and he was black and think the union wouldn't take him in. So it was that.
Did you get a feeling this was common, that if you were black it was tougher to break into the union?
Well, it was accepted practice back in those days, so you know, people might
which union was that again?
It was the bakeries union.
Bakeries
union. Yeah, because, you know, it was Hathaway Bakery, so he couldn't get in the union, and so he couldn't keep the job. So we stayed there until June 39, and his mother and father took us into their house for a while.
Which
that
was
on Earl Avenue.
Okay, now, and by June of 39, of course, the construction was really going strong.
Right.
What do you remember about the construction the whole time?
Well, the leveling, you know, the houses are here and then the houses are gone. The only thing that was remaining was on West Federal was the Black YMCA, called West Federal Street YMCA. And then on Madison was the Workman's Overall Supply. Those two things stayed. And the buildings were, you know, put up around them.
What became of those people? How did they relocate them? Did you ever hear anything about that?
I think everybody was on their own. You had to find a house for yourself. I never heard of anybody doing any.
Well, wait a minute. Now, when you moved, okay, in June of 1939, was it a voluntary move, or were you forced
to? No, they weren't moving. See, that was across the street.
This
that
is across the street. This is where Covington School is now.
Yeah,
well, is where you were living.
Yeah, well, Covington School was there then, but that little bit of property had not been sold. The owners hung on to that little bit of property. So that didn't belong to Covington. It was just a little, there was a house on the corner, about a 6 or 7 room house on the corner. And then this little flat was just below the corner. And, you know, that's the flat we lived in from October to June 39. October 38 to June 39.
I see. Now, you say that Covington School was there in 38 or 39.
Oh, yeah. See, because formerly there had been an old Covington School. It was torn down. And a new Covington School was erected on the same lot.
About what year? Before the project went in?
Yeah, I think just before the project. I think about 38, 39, 40, something like that.
Well, they finished the project in 40.
40.
People started moving in 40.
In about May.
So you're saying there was an old school there, and
they had been.
And they rebuilt a new school.
On the same, the kids had to go to different schools. While, of course, I didn't have any kids in school then, but neighborhood kids had to go to Jefferson and Butler School, I think. And I guess some went to Elm School while the new Covington was being erected.
While that construction was going on, literally right across the street from you, you know, they always had dignitaries, and one time a Mrs. Roosevelt came.
Did
you ever see any important people, or?
They were probably down, they'd usually be down around Federal Street instead of coming up Griffith, because see, that was it was an extreme end, because there's another thing about the project. I know you want to talk about the beginnings. I can't tell you too much. You know, as I say, I only saw the houses being torn down. And they started the excavating for the basement. But then we moved away, and we were gone a year.
Okay, that move then was from about June of 39 till till when you moved into the project.
I moved in June 40.
Okay, well, tell us, what was the procedure you went through, you and your husband went through, to get to move into the project?
Well, first, you had to be working.
You had to be working.
Yeah. And he had, he got called back to the mill. You know, sometimes you get called to the mill maybe for one day or 2 days, a week or a month or something like that. But at last he got called back and he was able to make a full pay. After he made his first full pay, then he was able to, consider himself employed again.
Had you two, gone on your own to some office to apply? How did that work?
Well, he had to go. There was an office down there on West Federal, on the corner of Federal and Wirt. And he had gone. I guess that's where he went to apply. And he had to take our marriage license. And you had to have a receipt to show, that you were working. A pay stub or something like that to show that you were employed.
So he had to take a marriage license,
mm-hmm,
and a pay stub.
Mm-hmm.
Were you under the general impression from people after you moved in that this was common, that most everybody had to show some means of employment to move in?
Yes, that was the only way you could get in then. You had to be working.
And how about this business about the marriage license?
Well, at first we were living in the back room. And in the building to the west of us, there was one couple that was a bit older than we were, because we were quite young then. We were in our early 20s. This couple, the man brought his marriage license and his girlfriend. And, he had taken his license to show, but then he moved his girlfriend in with him.
Instead of his wife.
Yeah.
I see.
And, of course, somebody knew them. And it was reported to the office, and they had to go. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen in about January of 1940, in other words, before people had moved in, I think they made up a couple of the apartments real nice and then had the general public go in and look at them. Do you ever recall anything like that?
No. I was living on the south side, and, that was much further to walk than it was to walk, when you're on near the project. And I had this new baby. My baby had been born in September 39.
And at the time you had moved down to the south side.
Yeah.
This would be temporarily.
All the way out,
right?
We lived out there with his mother for a year, from June 39 till June 40. So I didn't get a chance to see the apartment. But my sister had moved in apartment 44. She moved there about May, so I got a chance to see her apartment. And then we moved in toward the end of June of 40.
And it was your husband and your young baby?
Yeah, just the three of us.
What, you mentioned that, of course, then you had gone to your sister's. What were your first impressions, like when you used to visit your sister at the project?
Yeah. The project was nice in those days. It doesn't have the name that it's got now, because everybody was so proud. The apartments were clean, they got new furniture, and it was just like, you might think it was like some of the apartments out in Austintown. It was the equivalent of that in those days, because everything was brand new. Everybody was glad enough to have a place. As I told you, it was hard to find. If a house became vacant, there were 10 or a dozen people, trying to get that one house. So they were glad of the opportunity to get a new place to stay.
Before we stray a little bit from the subject, I just thought of another little question. You keep mentioning how tough housing was to
mm-hmm.
get during the Depression. Your own observation at that time, Mrs. Madison, you think it was a little tougher if you were black to get housing during the Depression?
I don't know, not knowing about, you couldn't get a house unless there was a vacant one or one for sale, for sale or for rent. And if there was one for rent, as I said before, too many people were trying to get that one house. Now, as for buying a house, there was this thing that the real estate men open up a street only so far, and you couldn't go beyond that street. There were blacks that lived, there were a few who lived on Parmalee at that time, on Parmalee near Foster Street to St. Augustine's Church, and then there Dr. Watkins lived, a dentist lived next door to St. Augustine's Church, and there were some people whose name was Howard. Mrs. Warner, the black policewoman, lived upon Parmalee in the 700 block. There was a mail carrier in the 600 block, and a mail carrier, those were considered professions in those days. There was a mail carrier on catty-cornered from Mrs. Warner, the policewoman. It was hard for blacks to get a house because, as I say, there was the limited number of rentals and even more limited number of those that were available for purchase. And they could only be obtained if the real estate agents, or whatever the real estate agents, their group, I should say.
Yeah, the realtors.
If they would open a block, then you could buy. But other than that, now, the block of Parmalee from St. E's over to Foster Street, I don't know if there was maybe one or two blacks near Foster. Maybe one or two.
Yeah.
Close to Foster. I'm just saying maybe. Because that really only opened up about in the 40s. Middle 40s or sort of toward the late 40s. Because
the reason I brought it up was when you moved in to the Westlake in 1940, did you notice immediately that that entire lower side of the project, so to speak, was black?
Well,
did you see how that
we
worked?
Accepted it. Yeah, I knew. I mean, we noticed. The kids called it, the children as they grew, they called it the white project, which was above Madison, and the colored project, which was below Madison. You noticed it, but the powers that be had established that, and what could you do? I mean, you moved where you were glad enough to get an apartment, and hey, you could question.
So you said initially then when you moved in, it seemed to you that general requirements is the family had to have an income.
Right.
Because it seems to me if you had a young baby, it was probably your husband that had got called back.
Yes.
And was working now at the
mill.
In
U.S. Steel.
In U.S. Steel. He had gotten called back to U.S. Steel. Mm-hmm. And you also had to show a marriage license.
Yes.
Do you recall when you moved in 1940 into 41, what was your initial rent? Remember that?
I think it was about $18.75.
A month?
Yeah, a month. And your rent was supposed to be based on about a fourth of your income.
Fourth of your income.
Mm-hmm. So you can imagine what the income must have been. Less than $20 for the rent. So for a month, the earnings must have been around $80.
$80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you mean on monthly, a fourth of monthly earnings.
Yeah, a fourth of your monthly earnings.
I see.
That's how your rent was based on, fourth of your monthly earnings.
I see. Now, when you moved in, you had to bring in all your own furniture?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
Did you have furniture, or had you had to go out and buy some?
Well, no, we had three bedrooms. I mean, what am I saying? We had three rooms, so we had a couch and a chair, and I think we had, sewing machine. Hey, always sewing machine. Not only this, but the other kind, the treadle kind. And my uncle first gave me, with the moving company, he had given me a table when we moved into that little apartment up on Griffith. And we had some chairs that we painted, people, those unpainted chairs we painted. So we had all that to bring in. And then we had a bed and a dresser and a baby bed and a few chairs, I guess. So
tell me, do you remember the actual day you moved in? Did you know, how did you get your things to the apartment? Yeah. Were you thrilled? You know?
Oh yeah, I was thrilled because I wanted, you know, a place of my own.
That's how you looked at it, as a place of your own?
Yeah, place of your own, you know. Because he, we lived with his mother for a year. We lived in this other apartment for about 8 months, 8 or 9 months. Then we lived with the, when we first got married,
in the room.
About 2 months, you know, from the end of August until about the middle of October. Yeah, you know, you always want a place that you can call your own, where you can, hey, go to bed when you want to, get up when you want to, or whatever.
Did your uncle having a moving company, did he give you a hand, or how'd that work?
You know, I don't recall. I don't, you know, I should remember, but I don't. Hey, remember, that's been nearly 50 years ago.
Okay, you moved in then in 40, and you were there for 13 years, till about 1953?
We lived in the back row first, 4 years.
That was your apartment, what was?
The building was 850, and the apartment was 130. 850 okay. West Federal Court, it's called, an apartment 130. Then when my second child was born, she was born in January, and then in April we were given a larger apartment with two bedrooms.
Did you have to go out and apply on your own?
Yeah, to the office again.
How about the rent? Did it change?
Well, the rent would change every time there was a strike. And you earned a little bit more, the rent went up. You know, every time the mill had a strike.
So they always knew when you were making more money.
Oh yeah, they always knew. And you were, every year you had to come to the office and show them what your yearly income had been. But yeah.
What happened to somebody if they had lost their job? What was the situation?
You know, I know. I'll tell you one thing. When they had that real long strike, about 110 or 11 days.
1947?
Whatever that year was, it probably was because...
Now this is before Westlake. Westlake.
No, this is in Westlake.
Yeah, that project would have been in the 40s. Yeah. I think the late 40s there was a strike.
Yeah. Well, you had to pay your rent whether you were working or not. Fortunately, I was always the one that liked to put something in the bank. So I had enough. So each month we were able to pay our rent. But some couples would have to leave, you know, some of the young couples. When we first moved in, they were mostly young couples with maybe one child. A few had two. You know, they were always small kids. Some people didn't have any kids, of course. And there were a few middle-aged people. We called them middle-aged then if they were in their 40s. but most of us were in our early 20s, or some were even, you know, in their late teens.
How about older people? Did you notice older people, or were they put in a certain section
no,
of the project?
No, you just, you know, just as you applied and as a vacancy came, they weren't separated. Those who had kids were mixed in with those who didn't have kids.
Now, you said that initially the projects, you had a very good impression of them. They were clean. Everybody kept them up. Were you told from the office, were inspectors ever sent around, or were you kind of pressured from the office to keep them clean, to keep them?
Well, they told you when to put your screens in. They told you when to take your screens out. They didn't tell you to wash your windows, but if you, you know, if you got too messy, they sort of sent you a letter, I think. Mr. Strait was...
Paul Strait.
Yeah. Sometimes he'd go walking through the project, you know, just observing, and he was really friendly. He would, you know, stop and talk to you.
When you were living then in the project, you met Paul Strait on occasions. He conducted his own inspections?
Yeah, he just walked through, you know, here's one thing he did. The kids used, they had screens, and the kids would, small kids would push the screen and make them bag. Well, I didn't like mine bagging, so down at one of the stores down, hardware store downtown, I'd seen a like a grill that you put on this. These were wooden doors. You would put the grill on inside, so we bought that. And Mr. Strait one day stopped and asked me where I got it. You know, so I guess he could see whether they could have that for the other. Because, you know, the screens would be bagged like this and sometimes pushed entirely out of the doors.
I see. How about things like keeping up with, who cut the grass, for example? Is that maintenance
you,
or?
Not then. Then you were assigned certain weeks or, you know, through the summer to cut it. And if you didn't cut it, then you had to pay to have it cut. You could either have somebody, you know, a child or somebody cut it for you, or you would pay the office and they'd have the maintenance man do the cutting.
So kind of like indirectly, you were responsible for your own...
For your own grass, for your own cutting.
And you're saying that the office did let you know when you weren't keeping everything up to par.
Right, uh-huh.
I see. Now, you mentioned, of course, that you had two children that really grew up with Wesley.
Yeah, but I had more than that before I was through. Marcia was born in 1944, I think, January. And then my son Bruce was born in 49. Then I had another son, Keith, who was born in, same year you are, 53.
So this is about four, at one point there were four or five children.
Four children.
Living in one unit down there with you and your husband.
Yeah, but I had, at that time I had the two bedrooms upstairs and the living room and kitchen downstairs. I was on the front row then, 900 West Federal, apartment 29 then. You know, I was given that apartment after the girl was born. She was the second child.
I see. How about the life for your children? I mean, what did they do? Did they go over to the Y there? What they down on
it was
Federal
available.
Or
yeah, it was available.
What were the activities they did?
You know, my kids usually just played out in the yard. My son got a paper route, the oldest one, and bought himself a bike. And then he and his cousin would go wandering all over town on their bike. The oldest one went to Hayes. He started to Hayes. That was before we moved out here.
He went to Hayes. How about Covington? What were the grades?
Well, they went to Covington then. Covington, the oldest son went to Covington, and the daughter went to Covington. Miss Eberhardt, and I don't know if you've ever heard of her, Miss Eberhardt. She died about maybe 2 years ago. Miss Eberhardt had taught Dr. Armstrong, you know Dr. Armstrong? She taught several generations. She taught my daughter and Hugh Frost. Hugh Frost lived around the corner. When I lived on Griffith, Hugh Frost lived right across from the project. Huff, William Huff.
Hugh Frost did not live in the project.
No, he lived across the street from it.
On Griffith?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
After they put it in, I'm trying to think, was there Covington School is back, that's part of their property.
But where he was living, it was still not their property.
I see.
You know, I told you there was a corner house there on the corner of Madison. Right. There was this little flat house that we lived in, you know, with the three little, row house with three little flats. And the Hughes house was below there, next door to it. And then there was another place that had like a storefront. And then housing behind, the Huffs lived there.
How about things like convenience of business? Were there a lot of little stores? I mean, how was it when you had to go shopping? Were there markets right there after they put the project in?
Well, LeBate store used to be on the corner of Wirt before the freeway was put there. So we'd walk up there, and then there was Susie's store across on Federal Street.
This is the name of the store?
Susie's? Her name. She was Italian, I think. Her name was Susie, and LeBate was Italian, too, up on the corner of Wirt and Federal, across the street, catty-cornered from the where the office is. Freeway is there now, you know.
How about the laundry? Where did you do the wash?
They had laundry rooms, and you provided your own washer. You kept your washer down there, and they had little stalls in a heated room, you know.
Let me get this straight, Mrs. Madison. You took your own washer?
Oh, yeah.
And you took it down to this big room?
Well, see, we didn't have...
These were hand...
What do you call it?
They had the rollers.
Yeah, that kind of washer.
Have one in my parents' house.
Yeah, everybody had that kind of washer. Later on...
You took it to one big room?
It stayed there. not every building had, let's see, about four buildings were serviced by one laundry room. Every building didn't have a basement. Now, on the corner of West Federal, there was a laundry room there. I used that laundry room when I lived in West Federal Court. Then when I moved on West Federal Street, the building directly behind us had a laundry room. So you'd go and down the steps and into the laundry room. They had stationary tubs. And after you washed, there was a separate room that had like stalls with grill between them. And each you had to provide your own lock and lock your clothes in that stall. They had specified times for you to wash. And you're supposed to be out, you know, your clothes are supposed to get dry. Sometimes the laundry wouldn't be working, you know, the heat wouldn't be working, the clothes wouldn't be dry. The next person wants to come in and hang their clothes up. And sometimes there were little problems, because, you know, some people could be nasty. You know, if you didn't take your clothes down when it was time for them to hang up, you know, if your clothes weren't dry, all you could do is take them home and lay them on chairs or lay them on the radiator or something like that to dry them.
Seems in that 13-year period that you lived there, there were a lot of rules and regulations that people had to abide by.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, though, that when things needed to get done, was the front office usually cooperative in making repairs? Or?
Yeah, well, yeah, they would usually, you know, if, say, for instance, if the laundry wasn't working, they would usually give them a day or two. Yeah. One thing about the laundry room, though, when you have small kids, you know how kids can get sick at night, and you have to wait until your turn to wash. You can't, you know, you got dirty clothes, you can't wash them until it's your turn. Of course, when you had kids, you were given sometimes two, say Tuesday and Thursday or Tuesday and Friday to wash. The kids usually would get sick over the weekend, so you had to wait until Tuesday to wash.
So you lived there until 1953, and then you moved
to my mother's house. In the meantime, we had bought this lot here, but we weren't able to build yet. So we moved to my mother's house, back on the south side again, on Chicago Avenue that time.
So in 1953, you had already bought this lot on Stalker Avenue. So it was, you moved to your mother's and then moved out here to Stalker Avenue.
We lived her house from June 53 until March 54.
Do you remember the rent you were paying? You said you paid about $18 a month beginning.
Yes.
When you left Westlake, 1953, do you remember what it was?
It was near around $70, I think.
But was it the same rules, a fourth of a monthly income?
I think that still applied.
During the 13 years that you lived in Westlake, could you think of any major developments or improvements? Was Westlake a better place to live when you left in 53 than it was in 1940, or vice versa? Did they make any major additions, new facilities, things like that?
No. I do recall that as the freeway was going through, there were some houses, real long row houses there on Madison that had to be moved. And they thought at first they'd have to raise them completely, but they were able to get a company that could split them, and then they moved, you know, each half around on Otis Street, it's called, Otis.
You were living in Westlake at the time those houses were moved?
Yeah.
About how long did the whole process of moving them take?
Oh, a friend of mine lived across the street from there. She would probably know better. She lived on Madison across from those houses. She'd probably know better, because, hey, I had another new baby. You know, when you've got your hands full, hey, three kids and a new baby.
You remember, though, the expressway being built up there?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was Madison Avenue just originally a two-lane road?
Two lanes and maybe one for passing, just as it is, you know, the present Madison from Covington Street over to North Avenue.
Right.
that same width. Mm-hmm. That's how wide it was. And there were houses on each side, of course.
I see. You don't happen to know what the people did in the meantime while they were waiting for their houses to be moved?
You know what? I don't know. I guess they had to... What they usually do is move you into another apartment and then move that apartment and then refill that apartment with somebody else. That's probably what they did.
I see. And do you recall about what year this was occurring, the year the Madison Freeway went in?
Mm-hmm. I know our church was there on the corner of Madison at Covington then, and we had to move that. You know, that church had to be moved. We were out here, you know, when the freeway was going up. We were already out here because we'd been out here.
So it was after 53.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, it had to be. It had to be in the 60s, I think.
Oh, when the freeway was going up.
Yeah, I think so, because unless it was late 50s.
Oh,
because
it was in the 60s when the freeway went up.
Yeah, because we were here. And, you know, our church, I was going to that Christ Memorial Church at that time. It later, we had to move out here. It's on Dryden Avenue.
I see.
Because I was on the building fund committee then. And
I see. That's how you remember the freeway and the fact that those project houses had to be divided, because you'd go into church and see this.
Yeah,
I see. Well, I think as kind of a closer there, Mrs. Madison, is there really anything that you'd want to add about either overall memories of the 13 years at Westlake to you? Was it generally a positive experience? Were you glad you lived there? You mentioned it was your first home, really, mm-hmm. your first individual mm-hmm. home.
Yeah, for that period, of, you know, for that length, that's the longest I lived anywhere, because, you know, you get tired of feeling like a gypsy. You're here a little bit, and here a little bit, and here a little bit. So I was glad enough to have a place to stay. But, the conditions can become pretty crowded. I found out before we left there, I was eager to get out. People are too close together, and you need elbow room. And it got so the kids would quarrel and fight. The parents would jump in. The police would be called. Some parents would have weapons, you know, things like that. And I wanted to get out of that place before.
So you're saying you could notice maybe even in 1952, 53, kind of the environment
mm-hmm,
was changing.
Changing drastically. And by that time, too, the social, shall we say, mores were changing. More and more single mothers were coming in with their boyfriends. One thing...
You mean they weren't regulating it as closely in
52? They tried, but it got to be too much for them, because... So many girls were, or sometimes women would move in. They'd have their husband maybe to begin with, and then they'd break up, and the boyfriend would move in. And at some time, for a time there, the project insisted on checking your apartment at least once a year.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear that. Yeah. They would come in for an inspection.
Yeah. And they would look in the closets. If you're single, you're not supposed to have men's clothes hanging in your closet. And some of the women got angry, and they get really nasty about somebody inspecting their closet. So
you're saying that even in the 13 years you lived there, you could...
Notice the change.
Notice the change.
And, you know, you weren't happy with the change. Because, you know, you're brought up to think that you should live a certain way, or, you know, that you have a certain prescribed...
Standard of living is more.
Yeah.
So as a general rule, you'd say you were very glad to move in, but by 1953, you were equally glad.
Even more glad to move out.
Well, thank you very much for your conversation, Mrs. Madison. Mm-hmm.